We're here today to learn how to give your opossum a proper massage. If you've been concerned about your opossum's flexibility and structural well-being, it's time to learn about proper opossum massage. Here we have a senior opossum. It's only natural that she's lost some of her youthful elasticity in spring, some opossums are known for. That's why, along with regular massage, she gets a daily supplement of glucosamine and chondroitin with MSM.
Hey, this is Whitey from the Ale Evangelist Show, and you're listening to the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Hey, did I tell you guys I got a goat?
When you are before, I had to do it. I'm an elected official, 3 terms. I had to swear on a Bible. You have to swear on a Bible to be an elected official in the United States of America. He alleges that a Muslim cannot do that ethically, swearing on the Bible.
You don't actually have to swear on a Christian Bible. You can swear on anything, really. I don't know if you knew that. You can swear on a Jewish Bible.
Oh, no, I swear on the Bible. I've done it three times.
I'm sure you have. I'm sure you've picked a Bible, but the law is not that you have to swear on a Christian Bible. That is not the law. You don't know that? All right, Ted Crockett.
I know that Donald Trump did it when we made him president.
Little column A, little column B.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Well, I'm 2 for 2 on the new year. Flubbed the back end yesterday. Flubbed the front end today. Good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today. Most of them are far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity, Congress, the swearing of oaths, politics, and or the news. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a while. There came a day when I swore to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Do you know what I didn't do? I'll tell you. And just to make sure you're really upset, I will promise you that if I'm ever elected to public office and required to take that oath again, I will not do the same thing again. It's just the way it is. That's what no religious tests means, folks. Here's how you get a hold of me. The text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. It's 209-565-3283. The email is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. And of course, we're on the web. Just use your web browser to go to thedavebowmanshow.com or podcast99.org. Get the show on demand and live. Ego bibere capulus et ali vivere. I drink coffee that others might live. It's even printed on my cup. See? Pretty dang proud of that. So, I guess, again, not a sports talk show, but I did not watch the game last night. I have no interest in that at all. None. Until the NCAA actually decides to have a real playoff, there's no point in it. Do you know why March Madness works? Do you know what works? Do you know why the NCAA basketball tournament works? Because you got 68 teams and you have the possibility of a Cinderella and you have excitement. It's like in football, they try to do away with that. They're not interested in any of that, and so they get boring, one-sided, quote-unquote, playoff games that I guess they were having trouble selling tickets for this one yesterday because it's boring. It's not even interesting, not even good games. They were all blowouts, and even the one that wasn't a blowout was never in doubt. There's no intrigue, no interest in it, and so I just don't have any interest in it. I just don't. You need to have a system where all the conference champions are in the playoffs. No more independence. That's BS. And any team that plays an FCS team or what they used to call Division 1A or lower team on its schedule, they don't get a bye. They don't get a number one seed. They should have to play big or go home. And until they do that, it's just nonsense. It's not even worth watching. I know, but the kids got to go to class, Dave. Yeah, right. Nobody believed that 50 years ago. Nobody believes it now. So everybody's up in arms. Well, everybody in my social media feed yesterday and the day before, up in arms over this little thing. Representative Rashida Tlaib. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. I believe it's Tlaib. Being sworn in and putting her hands on a Koran as she raised her right hand to swear the oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. And I've run into people everywhere from, you know, she can't do that, to, as you heard the spokesman there for Senator Roy Moore, explaining that you have to do it on a Bible, and apparently didn't know that you don't have to do that on the Bible. And this has really upset people. Now, again, this is a red herring, folks. It really is. We're wasting so much time whining about what she put her hand on that we're not paying any attention to her actual policies and politics that are involved here. This is the birth certificate all over again. We're going to chase this red herring. We're going to chase that tail all the way to the end. And in the meantime, not paying attention to the realities of what's going on. Look, I get it. You don't like her. She's a Democrat. She's a progressive. She's a socialist. She's a Palestinian. You know, there's all kinds of reasons to disagree with her. But this idea that somehow or another, because she swore on a Koran instead of your Bible, she can't be a congressperson, or she's not being loyal, or she can't fulfill that oath, is nonsense, folks. It's absolutely pure and simple nonsense. And here's the problem. We conservatives keep saying we support and defend the Constitution of the United States until we don't like something that someone else is doing under the Constitution of the United States. Then we've got to run our mouths about how mad we are about it. I don't care that you don't like that section in there that says no religious tests. It says no religious tests, period. It doesn't say no religious tests unless the person being involved is a Muslim. Then we have to have a religious test. It doesn't say no religious tests unless the person that's taking the test is something we don't like, Catholic. It doesn't say that. It says, quote, no religious tests, period. And how did we get to this point, you may cry? Well, we got to go back to 1960. I know, it seems like we're actually going to go back further than that. But in 1960, this guy, Roy Torcaso, was appointed to be a notary public by the governor of Maryland. Now, I'm sure that there's no, you know, I only know personally one notary public, and I'm pretty sure that the procedure for coming, I know you got to take a civil service test and you got to take some classes and stuff like that. But as far as the governor appointing him, I'm pretty sure this isn't a patronage in the sense that he made, you know, massive donations to the governor's campaign or anything like that. They just needed some notary publics, and he happened to be qualified and got appointed one. And he went to take the oath of office, and they hit a snag. They hit a snag because in Maryland, which was founded in 1634, there was an issue. When you go back to the beginning, the founding of the state of Maryland, what would actually become the state of Maryland at the time, it was a colony, obviously, was founded by this guy. His name is Lord Calvert, George Calvert. He is the first Baron of Baltimore. Baltimore, Maryland. Funny how that works, isn't it? Lord Calvert is actually the man who got from the king the charter to start the colony of Maryland. Now, he did this for some interesting reasons. Number one reason why he did it was obviously he wanted to make money. Maryland is a little bit different than the other colonies in that it is run as a proprietorship. It's run as a business. That's the plan. They're in the business of Maryland to make money. Believe it or not, this is what they want to do. Lord Calvert is a trenchant supporter of the king, and he is a Roman Catholic. Yes, a Roman Catholic. He is loyalty, I guess you could argue, is to the Pope. He likes the king, Charles, but his loyalty is really to the Pope. And so he convinces the king to give him this charter for this land between Virginia and Pennsylvania, and he is going to found his colony called Maryland, which is named after the king's wife, by the way, and he's going to make buku bucks. He's going to make money hand over foot, and he's going to be a rich man. But unfortunately, life intervenes and he dies. 2 years later, his son, Cecil Calvert, who's now the second Baron of Baltimore, Maryland. Funny how that works. He actually manages then to found the colony. He actually starts sending people to Maryland and they start operating this as a business. But you need to understand some history here. What is going on in England in the 1640s? What's happening? Well, King Charles has dissolved Parliament, and he is refusing to abide by the Magna Carta. He's refusing to abide by the Bill of Rights, as it were. He is really ticking off the Protestants in England, and eventually you're going to end up with a, I guess you could call it a revolt, but Oliver Cromwell and the Roundheads are going to eventually start a war that rages all over England and Scotland and even Ireland. And in the middle of this war, Cecil Calvert is trying to run his proprietorship in Maryland. He's trying to make money. And he's running into problems here because he's a Catholic. Cromwell's winning the war and the Roundheads are winning the war. And they keep asking him, hey, whose side are you on? And every other person that they ask, whose side are you on, they end up taking their land away from them if they say they're on the king's side. And so Calvert is kind of, well, I'm on your side. I'm on your side, he keeps saying to Cromwell and the Roundheads. I'm on your side, the Protestants. I'm on your side. I'm on your side. And in the meantime, he keeps telling the king, well, I really love you. I'm on your side. He's playing both ends against the middle. He's trying desperately to save his business because that's how he looks at Maryland. He looks at Maryland as a business, not just a colony. And of course, this creates all kinds of problems. He actually appoints a Protestant governor of the state of Maryland because he's trying to appease the Roundheads. He's trying to appease Cromwell and the others and maintain his business. And in the midst of all this, in 1649, the state of Maryland, which has become something of a magnet now for Catholic immigrants, as the Roundheads, as the Protestants are winning the war in England, Catholics begin to leave hand over foot, including a pair of Catholics, John and Martha Holt, make their way to Prince George's County in Maryland. Why does that matter? Well, John and Martha would have a son by the name of Charles, and he would have another son by the name of Charles. And that particular Charles is my great-great-great-great-eight generations ago grandfather. So I find this of interest to me. In 1649, the colony of Maryland, as it was then, passed a new law. The law made it clear that they would tolerate anybody of the Christian faith. Whereas the Puritan colonies, Massachusetts, Connecticut, that area, tended to be Puritan in nature, and they didn't, they kind of threw out people that weren't Puritans, hence Rhode Island. Maryland made it clear that they were not, this was going to be open to Catholics. They weren't going to ban Catholics. Pennsylvania had its Quaker, Georgia had its Anabaptists. You had all this stuff going on, and Maryland became a key point for religious toleration. Specifically in the sense that we will allow Catholics to live here in peace and we will not bother them. We won't undo anything. We won't, chase them out. We won't punish them. We won't do any of those kinds of things. The wars fade into history, but they're not forgotten. All of this conflict in England over religion, primarily, is not forgotten in America when we get around to framing our Constitution after our revolution. We look at things and start going, well, there are states here that have official state religions. Maryland is officially Catholic. Pennsylvania, officially Quaker. Massachusetts, officially Puritan. Georgia, officially Anabaptist. And so forth and so on. The states could on their theory, they could establish these religions. And we've talked about the fact that the Bill of Rights, even though it says in the First Amendment, Congress shall not establish a religion, that didn't apply to the states at first until later it would be incorporated. In the beginning, the states could, in fact, choose their own religion. But then they put into that section there, they put into that Constitution an interesting little bit, as it were. There was very little debate over this, by the way. There was very little discussion of it. There was very little argument, at least in the convention sense. At the actual convention, there were a couple of people who were disappointed that the Constitution was purely secular, that it made no reference to God at all. And there were people who were just fine with that. They didn't care. They figured, again, they were trying to establish a federal government, not a state government. The states could do so if they chose to. But they made it clear that under the United States, any office or public trust, no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification. You can't do that. And they sent that to the states. And as we've talked about on other occasions on Constitution Thursday, some of the states objected to that. Some of the people were disappointed by that. Some of the people were angry about this. But they tended to be the religious focal points of things. But why did they put that in there? Well, the problem came in that you had a rather diverse country, didn't you? It's easy to say, we're going to have a religious test. You have to be a Christian in order to be to hold office or public trust under the United States. It's easy to do that, right? I mean, it would make sense. We'd say it all the time. We're a Christian nation, right? But who decides what that actually means? What? What do you mean, Dave? Who decides what that means? Who gets to decide what it actually means to be a Christian? Now, you might be saying to yourself, well, it's very simple, Dave. You simply confess that you believe in Jesus Christ, the thing there, and whammo bammo, you're a Christian. Twere it only that simple, right? Because we all know, I hate that phrase, but we have all experienced the idea that that is not how most of us define Christianity, is it? I have a good friend on Facebook that I was a shipmate with, who makes it very clear that if you don't believe exactly, and I mean exactly, what he believes, you are not a Christian. No matter how many church services you go to, no matter how many Bible verses you can recite, no matter how many treatises you've written or sermons you've preached, it doesn't matter. If you don't believe what he believes, you're not a Christian. Some years ago, we had a little issue on the show in 2008 when a guest of mine made a comment about Mormons aren't Christians. And this set off a firestorm of debate. Of course, the LDS people, because you can't call them Mormons anymore. They've changed that. No Mormons anymore. Now they're LDSers, I guess. I don't know what their title is. At any rate, they insisted that they are Christians. Well, okay. If let's take that argument and say, okay, LDS Church is Christian. Does the LDS Church believe the same thing that the Baptist Church believes? Does the Roman Catholic Church believe the same thing that the LDS Church believes? So again, who gets to decide what it means to be a Christianity? And Oliver Ellsworth looked around the colonies or the states as they were in 1787 and came to the same conclusion. Wait a minute. We got Puritans. We got Baptists. We got Quakers. We got Catholics. We got Anabaptists. We've got Presbyterians. We've got Stay-at-Home-itarians. We've got, if we start putting religious tests in there, whose test do we pick? Do we pick your test or my test? And again, the problem is if you start passing laws that favor one religion or another, or establish what this test might be, or you allow those tests to be inflicted on other people, what naturally happens? If you say to me, well, you have to confess that Jesus is, you know, I don't know, pick something. I'm just picking something here at random, that Jesus had blonde hair and red eyes. Okay. And if I don't happen to agree with that, does that negate my Christianity? Well, according to the test, it does. But all the people who believe that he had blonde hair and red eyes, suddenly they're able to run for office. And you end up with essentially a theocracy. You end up with people who believe one thing ruling over people who don't believe that. And whatever you think of religion, and I don't really care what your religion is. I don't. I've told you this before. I have my beliefs. I have never in my life felt the need, the compelling desire to force you to believe what I believe. I believe what I believe because of my experiences, because of what I went through, because of what I experienced and believed and learned. I don't expect you to be the same thing. If you ask me my opinions about something, I will tell you. I don't have any problem telling you what I believe. But I'm not going to force it upon you. This is something that is very important to me. I don't know that there are words to express how important that is to me. I grew up, as many of you know, in Utah, as a religious minority in Utah. Believe me, I have experienced living in a functional theocracy. I have been there. I'm telling you, they can smile and say, well, it didn't happen, Dave. Yes, it does. Well, it did. Utah's changed. Everywhere has changed. Who knows if it does anymore or not? But I can tell you it did then. I've experienced that. I've been through this. And even if you say, well, you're a Christian, but you're not a Christian like me, you're setting up a problem. Anytime you start dealing with religion and exclusionary practices, you're going to run into a problem. There were those during the debates over the ratification were upset because they read that and they went, oh, wait, this means, and I'm going to read you exactly what they said. Okay. They were concerned because, quote, Jews, Turks, infidels, heathens, and even Roman Catholics might hold national office under the proposed constitution. God knows we don't want that, they said, as they talked about all men are created equal. Even back then, there were the same objections. But the framers stuck to their guns and they said, no, no religious tests. And while the states continued to, in some cases, have them, in fact, Maryland was probably the most vehement about this. Maryland's Constitution, Article 36, included the wording, nor shall any person otherwise competent be deemed incompetent as a witness, a juror, or on account of his religious belief, provided he believes in the existence of God and that under his dispensation, such person will be held morally accountable for his acts and be rewarded or punished thereafter, therefore either in this world or in the world to come. That's what the Maryland Constitution said. So in other words, they were a little more tolerant about it. As long as you believed in some kind of God and eternal judgment, they were going to be okay with it, right? And then along came this guy, Roy Torcaso, who, by the way, is an atheist. He doesn't believe in God. He doesn't believe in eternal judgment. He doesn't believe in dispensation. He doesn't believe in any of that stuff. And he was told, after he received his appointment as a notary public by the governor, no, you can't be one. Sorry. You're out. And of course, he sued, and it went all the way to the United States Supreme Court, because it should have. And the United States Supreme Court, looking at this particular case, said the establishment of religion clause in the First Amendment means at least this. Neither a state nor the federal government can set up a church. Neither can pass laws which aid one religion, aid all religions, or prefer one religion over another. Neither can force nor influence a person to go to or to remain away from a church against his will or force him to profess a belief or disbelief in any religion. As from 1947, the court had already said, you states can't do this. As they looked at Torcaso's case, Judge Black wrote, there is and can be no dispute about the purpose or effect of the Maryland Declaration of Rights requirement before us. It sets up a religious test, and it was designed to, and if it's valid, does bar every person who refuses to declare a belief in God from holding public office or trust in Maryland. We repeat and again reaffirm that neither a state government nor the federal government can constitutionally force a person to profess a belief or disbelief in any religion. Neither can constitutionally pass laws or impose requirements which aid all religions as against non-believers, and neither can aid those religions based on a belief in the existence of God. The Supreme Court made it very clear in the case of Tarasco v. Watkins, there are no religious tests. You cannot do that. And yet, the same people who say to me, Constitution, 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 Dave, Constitution, 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 are the same people who are posting on their goddamn social media about how a Muslim can't swear on a Quran. Because I don't believe what I believe. Too freaking bad. You're chasing a wild goose. Instead of focusing on what you need to focus on, which are the politics of the situation, the proposals, the law, the legislation, you're wasting your time with something that has already been settled and, quite frankly, is something that you shouldn't even bother caring about. Jefferson said it, didn't he? All those years ago. The legitimate powers of government extend to such acts as are only injurious to others. But it does me no injury for my neighbor to say there's 20 gods or no god. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg. Thomas Jefferson, your demigod of liberty, made it clear. What do you care what your neighbor believes about God? Why? As long as he or she is not forcing you to believe the same thing, using the power of government to force it upon you, doesn't matter. I don't particularly care for Congresswoman Tlaib. She didn't say anything that I want to hear. But in her 2 days, 3 days now in Congress, she hasn't passed any laws to force me to believe what she believes. And I don't believe that she will. I don't believe that she will pass such a law. She won't even introduce such a law. And if she does, the avalanche of outrage will be immense and the law will never pass anyway. And even if it did pass, and even if it did get passed by the Senate, and even if it did get signed by the president, the Supreme Court would strike it down. You're worrying about something you don't need to worry about. It isn't going to happen. But by God, what you're doing is showing your bias and your hatred for anybody that doesn't believe what you believe, because they're not what I want them to be. They don't believe what I believe, therefore they're bad. That's what you're saying. Well, I got news for you. When I raised my hand, swore my oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, you know what my left hand was on? My right hand was up. You know what my left hand was on? Absolutely nothing. It was down by my side. As I stood at attention and I raised my right hand and I said, I do so solemnly swear or affirm to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. So forth and so on. And should I ever be elected to public office again, I'm not running, but if I ever were, do you know what my hand will be on? Absolutely nothing. I'm not swearing an oath to God. I'm not swearing an oath to my religion. I'm not swearing an oath to anything except to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. And whatever state I happen to be in, should I win office, hopefully governor of Wyoming in 2030. Failing that, I don't feel the need to put my hand on anything to back up my oath. I just don't. I think it's funny. I saw an article this morning about, or last night, about heathens, Norse gods, sailors who on an aircraft carrier who actually have established a religion of their own. They worship the Norse gods, Odin and the likes of that. They have a chaplain, they have services, and I'm wondering what they're put their hands on to re-enlist. I guarantee it won't be a Bible. Does that invalidate their oath to the Constitution of the United States? No. Why don't we wait until Ms. Tlaib actually does something that violates her oath to the Constitution of the United States? Why don't we wait till then and then take up our issues with her rather than starting with something that was settled long ago in this country? There are no religious tests. You want to live in a theocracy? Go live somewhere else. We, the United States of America, don't do that. And that was the way it is. I got to get going. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there. So don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman, and this is my show, The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Here every Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific, and on demand, thedavebowmanshow.com. See you tomorrow, everybody.
Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.